This is Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Tuesday, June 14th. I'm Tim Priester with Pete Sampson from The Athletic, a two-man group today. And Pete, since we last gathered last Tuesday, CJ Carr verbally committed that night to Notre Dame. Elijah Page, the offensive lineman, verbally committed on Friday. A lot of talk about CJ Carr possibly reclassifying, which I want to ask you about. Dante Moore, what's going to happen with him? And then a bunch of intel from Tom Loy at 24/7 Sports about some guys that may be falling Notre Dame's way. So let's start with CJ Carr in particular, Pete. And I know that you looked into some of the reclassifying possibilities. He's an older player within the class of 2024. What we're told is that nothing is definite one way or another, but it's a possibility that will be left open to see if CJ Carr wants to reclassify, in a while from now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. And I realize everyone sort of wants a definitive answer now, but the best answer I can give on that, talking to CJ Carr, talking to Jason Carr's dad, talking to Lloyd Carr's grandfather, is that, you know, it makes sense to leave those options open for you if you so choose to grab them. You know, it was not lost on me when I went up for his announcement. His sort of high school football coach gave sort of the opening welcome before the broadcast. And when he said, you know, I'm looking forward to having CJ for two more years, like, it was sort of an affected tone. It was like, two more years, right?
Did it get dead right? Silent then?
Yeah, when just like everyone's like, okay. So, you know, I don't know if he's going to do it. I think some of that may depend on how the class of 2023 goes, but I think the most interesting thing to me is, for me, were one, the fact that Notre Dame was open to it. And then also, like, how the hell is this going to work? And then you come to find out, talking to the family, you know, he repeated eighth grade. He came into high school with high school credits. He has a May birthday, so he's already 17 years old at the end of his sophomore year. He would not be out of his depth age-wise or maturity-wise. You know, this goes back to something we talked about in the last podcast when O'Malley and I saw him at Irish Invasion. It was like, if you told me he was a 2023 prospect, I wouldn't have been like,
right,
oh, he's undersized. No, just like, he just looks like a normal high school quarterback.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And you mentioned maturity, and I think, and you spoke with him. I mean, any interview conversation that you've seen with CJ Carr, there's a pretty high degree of maturity there. And I think, you know, I mean, certainly any quarterback can benefit, any football player can benefit from a junior, senior year of high school football, but he does not look, when you look at his sophomore film and you look at him in camp settings going in to his junior year, he certainly carries himself, throws the football, his movement. What I love about seeing him in camp settings is the 100% effort with every little detail of dropping back the pass, play action fake, footwork, rolling out, all the necessary ingredients. He looks very mature as a football player. So we'll see. And I think it's great that, I mean, it's great for him and it's great for Notre Dame that he has some time to get this figured out, get the classes set up for your junior year. You don't have to make a rash decision. So much in college football is make quick decisions. The coach left, we got to hire a new coach because recruiting and, you know, all that. They don't have to worry about some of those variables. So that's good. So Dante Moore, what do you think is next there? Because I mean, I think most of the intel that's floating out there is that, I mean, ultimately Dante Moore has several options and Notre Dame was always a great option for him, but it's not as great now because CJ Carr is in the class and could actually end up being in Dante Moore's class.
There are two things that I felt strongly about with Dante Moore's recruitment. Well, three things. One is that Notre Dame felt like they were going to get him, I think, up until Monday of last week. Two, that if NIL was not a factor, he probably would have already been committed to Notre Dame. And then three, I was probably on a little bit of an island on this, but like Oregon is a real concern. I think all that stuff is still going on, except like Notre Dame. I think we sort of said like we'll let you know when Notre Dame's optimism about Dante Moore changes, because it had been pretty consistent. Right. It's changed.
Yes.
That optimism has changed. I think that the NIL schools have been at the forefront with Notre Dame on Dante Moore from the very beginning. And I think that the NIL schools are in the ascendancy there, and Notre Dame is sort of on the way down. Talking to people in Detroit area, which is not to say Dante Moore's camp, just, you know, people around the CJ Carr situation, and Michigan, because Michigan is desperate to get Dante Moore too, is the feeling is it's much more of a, like a Texas A&M Oregon recruitment with maybe LSU as a side player. I think that other than, sort of like the Notre Dame fan base, that's kind of it for where the optimism around Dante Moore starts and ends.
No, I would agree. I would agree that we've heard similar things that, you know, I mean, Michigan with Jim Harbaugh, is that really a great option for a quarterback right now? I just, you know, from the outside looking in, I don't see that. I'm glad you brought up NIL, because I don't think I used this question, but one of the questions that was submitted for today's podcast was, you know, would Notre Dame's recruiting well? How much better would Notre Dame be recruiting if NIL wasn't in play? You know, and Notre Dame they do have a plan. The plan is unfolding for NIL, but I don't think there's any doubt that with the caliber of recruiter that Marcus Freeman is, and then subtract the money aspect of the NIL, they probably would be doing better. And as you say, Dante Moore might very well be committed without that.
Yeah, that was, I've talked to Marcus about this. It's just like, when a prospect comes in and NIL is their first priority, is that immediately like, well, probably not going to get this guy? And he's like, yeah, I mean, that's like, that's a something you got to acknowledge if you're Notre Dame. If NIL is number one on your list, that's probably not a conducive situation for Notre Dame. And like, not much has changed there.
Yeah. Now, Pete, it was a big recruiting weekend for Notre Dame last weekend. Some of the names I'm going to say will be guys that were in town. Some are not, were not necessarily, but, you know, I mentioned that Tom Loy at 24/7 Sports put out like an update on where he felt Notre Dame was with guys like Rico Flores and Jason Moore, Jaden Osbury, the linebacker, Ronan Hannafin, a two-way guy that I like at receiver, Christian Gray, Micah Bell, Caleb Downs, Monroe Freeling. Most of those guys, it's looking pretty darn good for Notre Dame. Rico Flores, I think, is probably the one that now, I think there was Tom Loy and a couple other guys put in a crystal ball for Flores for Notre Dame. But I mean, most of those guys, I don't know about Monroe Freeling, who I love. I think he would be the best offensive lineman in the group, probably the highest ranked one. So that's no great mystery there. Caleb Downs, a five-star guy. It sounds like Notre Dame is certainly holding their own there, but like for Flores and Jason Moore and Jaden Osbury, Hannafin, Christian Gray, Micah Bell, I mean, right now those guys are looking like Notre Dame.
I agree with the majority of that, like Flores in particular. I think that's probably the one where Notre Dame made the biggest move last weekend.
Right. I would agree with that.
You know, Ronan Hannafin and Christian Gray, those are important pickups for Notre Dame, but like guys that Notre Dame should get anyway. Like Christian Gray plays at Dismet. I realized Jordan Johnson went there. That didn't work out well, but Christian Gray is like more of a classic Dismet private school kid from St. Louis. Ronan Hannafin goes to the most Notre Dame sounding on track high school of all time, Buckingham Brown and Nichols School. So I feel strongly a
feeder school for Notre Dame football.
I feel strongly about Notre Dame's chances there, but then it's you get in. I have less of an insight on guys like Osbury, Jason Moore, Caleb Downs. I think those are all battles that probably previous staffs would not have won. Monroe Freeling is interesting. I sort of like poked around on that last week. I think they like Elijah Page better. And Charles Jagusa better.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Wow. I'm glad you brought up Elijah Page. I'm a little surprised at that. And I feel like the film review I did on him, I didn't do a really good job of expressing my message on him.
On Page,
because I don't think Page is where Jagusa and Freeling are now at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean I don't think he's going to develop. I just think that at this stage of his career, there are too many fundamental issues right now. But you know, he's a young offensive lineman and learning. And I think he's definitely a 5-year guy on the college level. I just don't see him as fundamentally sound as Jagusa and Freeling. But I would have to say that I'm a little bit surprised if they think Page is better than Freeling.
I think that what they love about Page is they went out and saw him in spring and it was like 93 degrees outside. And he worked outside for 3 hours, which is a total monster.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So I think it's, I believe that's something that you could see Harry Hiestand really valuing, right?
Yeah.
That kind of attitude and work ethic. So, and that's not to say Freeling is not. And I think Jagusa, they just sort of see like, holy crap, what a collection of physical tools this kid has. That I think he is the most off the charts in terms of just like, physical traits you can build. I think they're just at a point now where it's they can be choosy with their last offensive line spot.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to hear that is their impression of him, because I think Jagusa and Freeling are really, really good.
Yeah, so, right.
And I think Page has a chance to be that. I just don't think that his performance is on the level of those two guys right now. Just my opinion on that. Last thing, and we do have some questions in the second segment because Notre Dame baseball is a very hot topic. Notre Dame baseball goes to Knoxville against the number one team in the 64-team NCAA tournament field. They go out there and win the first game. They get hammered in the second game, which, you know, as it was happening, it's just like it doesn't matter whether it's 1-0 or 9-1, man. This is just game two. But you certainly felt like 6 innings into game three on Sunday. Burns, their right-hander, was throwing a two-hitter. And Notre Dame only had 9 outs left. And as I put it in my recap, Notre Dame was at that point treading water before they started walking on it because David LaMonta, the catcher, hit his second home run of the season and seventh or eighth of his career in a 5-year starting career down the right field line to tie it. And then Jack Brannigan put him in the lead. They put two more runs on the board, and Jack Finley, the freshman left-hander, was brilliant. I had speculated that they might bring it in pregame, the morning of Sunday's game, that they might bring Finley in as early as like maybe the sixth or seventh inning. Well, they brought him in the fifth, and he threw one hit ball over 5 innings. A phenomenal job by Link Jarrett. Nothing should surprise us. I wrote a story yesterday that Notre Dame's not an underdog against anybody with Link Jarrett as their coach and where their mindset of this program is right now.
I mean, I read that and I was like, well, I mean, Tennessee was like, people were having discussions about like Tennessee versus the field. Who do you got? Tennessee was sort of is this the all time greatest college baseball team?
And Brannigan like, actually noted
You know, the amount of power that they have, the pitching that they have, just like
the environment
down there.
I mean, the environment they were playing in down there was
so
it was spectacular to be in that environment down there.
And then like I enjoy nothing less than debates about like whether it's an upset or like who's an underdog and yada yada. But like the way Notre Dame beat them with power is shocking to me based on that's not how they've beaten people all year. And then you look at the teams Notre Dame has played, the top 16 seeds, what were going into the postseason, what are they like 1-7, I think? 1-5. And then I am not versed in college baseball at all, but then when you look at the SEC records and they were what, like 25-5 Tennessee against a conference that produced 4 teams to the College World Series, like, holy crap. I mean, that was kind of an all-time regular season team, Notre Dame just ended it. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, you have to consider it an upset, but yeah, you understand my point about Notre Dame baseball, that under any circumstances.
And that was when I spoke to Paul Maneri, we were going back about Florida State in 2002,
right,
which was sort of like Tennessee, and the team when they went down there was like, we're going to win these games, like we've got this. So yeah, I mean, they don't, in that locker room, they don't consider it an upset at all. Everybody else in the universe would.
I mean, the numbers, like for example, and trust me, the ball flies out of that ballpark, but the numbers in general, Tennessee had 82 more home runs than Notre Dame going into the series. I mean, it's ridiculous stuff, but they find a way. I want to kind of save some of my comments because there's a couple questions, but it's incredible. It's all tempered by the very realistic possibility that the last games of the Link Jarrett era are coming up in Notre Dame, whether they win it all or not. You know, I mean, if you can go to Tennessee and win 2 out of 3, obviously you can beat anybody that you play. They do open with Texas at 7 o'clock Friday night in Omaha. And then the other side of the bracket is Oklahoma, Texas A&M, I believe. So, you know, we'll see. We have questions in segment 2 about baseball as well as football, and I believe a basketball question as well coming up. Segment 2, burning up the boards.
Irish fans, listen up. Summer is here, and with it, good times and celebration. And what better way to celebrate than with fireworks shipped straight to your door? Located just 15 minutes from campus, OC Fireworks offers one of the largest online selections of fireworks for all your needs. Graduations, family reunions, gender reveals, sporting events, and of course, Independence Day. Visit ocfireworks.com for shipping details, and be sure to use promo code IRISH on checkout for your special gift.
This is segment 2 of Irish Illustrated Insider. It's called Burning Up the Boards. We start with a question from Party at the Moon Tower. What's the biggest upset, Notre Dame over Tennessee in baseball or Notre Dame beating Ohio State in the Horseshoe in September? And then a second question, bigger win, Notre Dame football versus Clemson in 2020 or Notre Dame baseball versus Tennessee?
I think the bigger upset would be baseball. And the bigger win, I'll go with football because it kept a perfect season alive. You know, it's like it kept Notre Dame in a national championship hunt. This also kept Notre Dame baseball in the national championship hunt, but football being a national championship hunt is a little more significant than baseball.
That's the exact when it was phrased as bigger win. When you say football versus baseball, well, that's end of story.
Yeah.
bigger upset. You know, that's tough to, probably baseball because you had to win 2 out of 3. And yeah, again, the environment. The environment there is really, really daunting.
There's no college football discourse this summer about, is Ohio State one of the greatest teams of all time? Like, we know they're really good, but like, that's how people were describing Tennessee baseball.
Yeah, very true. In segment 1, we were talking, and I said Jack Brannigan mentioned that when the bracket came out, you know, the talk was Tennessee or the field. And that kind of stuff fuels a team like this that has supreme confidence in its ability to match up against anybody. So, was there a question? I think there's another question. Like the conversation was, I put this in my Thursday thoughts last week, that would this be the biggest upset in Notre Dame sports history? And the one that I referred to was 1957 Notre Dame over Oklahoma, because Bud Wilkinson was the coach and they were 107-8-1 in an 11-year span. And Notre Dame had lost 11 out of 17 games under Terry Brennan. That year, Notre Dame ended up going 7-3, but Notre Dame went to Oklahoma and not only beat Oklahoma, but shut them out 7-0. So, that under all the circumstances there, and that's why I say I don't think Notre Dame baseball, it's a good angle for a story anyway. I mean, they're not an underdog against anybody with Link Jarrett in the current makeup of this program. Question from Irish Cowboy 22. Now that Notre Dame has CJ Carr, who's the most important recruit left on the board in the class of 2023?
You could take this a bunch of different directions. I will, if we're not attaching sort of realism to it, if that makes sense, like Richard Young would be my guy.
He's five-star
running back, a position where Notre Dame has good players, but maybe not great, great players. I'm torn between him and Caleb Downs.
Yeah, well, Richard Young's a great man. He's special. He's a cut above in any running back that we're talking about. I would probably lean towards Caleb Downs. I love Monroe Freeling, and I think a great offensive tackle is imperative to have. They have two of them right now in the starting lineup with 2 years of eligibility or 2 years of playing time for each one of them. I would imagine those two are going to leave after the third year. Richard Young's great, but I would say Caleb Downs because that's a legit five-star defensive player, and I would always choose on the defensive side of the ball first. Anybody else come to mind for you, Pete?
There are a bunch of receivers you could pick. Rico Flores is a little bit farther down the list, but in terms of his rating, let's be honest, like Keon Keeley, I realize he's committed and has been committed for a very long time, but like Ohio State, Alabama, Florida, everybody's going to still be coming after him until he signs in December.
Right. I was not taking into consideration guys who've been previously committed, but
yeah,
losing Keon Keeley would be tragic.
Yeah. And I feel good about it. Notre Dame feels good.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. I don't think that changes. I mean, the way he carried himself and handled himself in visiting in the spring, I mean, everything indicates that he's sold on Notre Dame. I know that narrative is still out there and you never know until December, but I think everybody at Notre Dame feels pretty good about that. We've said that before. I realize that. Question from Frank 1957. Is Notre Dame done trying to land a grad transfer wide receiver? And we're going to tack on Hayden Adam Z, who asks, is it Freddie Canteen / Cam Smith, quote, break glass in case of emergency time yet for Notre Dame and its wide receivers? Or at this point, would Notre Dame just lean on tight ends and running backs to supplement the passing game?
My hunch is that that last point will be how they deal with it. I don't think they're ever done trying to find somebody, but we're beyond that earlier.
No doubt.
Hey, remember Nick McCloud? Yes. Like, well, it's mid-June. So it's, the summer stuff has already started now. I think that makes it even more complicated because now you're falling behind everybody.
Right.
So
don't you think it's an indication that Avery Davis is coming along? They're happy with the progress of Braden Lindsey. I don't know about the younger guys. Tobias Merriweather is now in the equation. You have some options with, I think, Chris Tyree in particular and how you can use him in the slot. It's not going to be an ideal situation. It's just not.
No.
They painted themselves in this corner with the poor recruiting that was done prior to this.
Yes. I think this is kind of like they've made their bed. Now they're going to lie in it but it doesn't mean like the points you make are good. Like Chris Tyree has a lot of multi-positional flexibility. Avery Davis is very reliable when he's healthy and he should be healthy. So there's a lot of good stuff there. They just don't have enough numbers. So now you're hoping and praying that Tobias Merriweather can be like a very special elite kind of freshman.
And I think that they've put Tobias Merriweather on an accelerated kind of, program.
Right?
Yeah, they do. But I mean, I think it's a reflection that they have confidence. Hey, maybe we might be able to catch lightning in a bottle right out of the chute with Tobias Miller. I mean, he's a high rated receiver, and rarely do you say, oh, okay, this freshman has to play right away, but that's the situation that they're in with Merriweather, and he may be able to back that up.
Yeah, I agree. It's he's going to get every opportunity.
No doubt about that.
Couldn't ask for a better situation for him.
Question from Kavik. If Notre Dame does not add a receiver from the portal before August, what are the chances that running backs Jadarian Price or Jabron Payne play some slot receiver? Didn't Ricky Waters do it? Ricky Waters did do it. Ricky Waters did do it. He was.
Did he rush for 10,000 yards in the NFL?
Yeah, he did. He did. Okay. And I'm not sure that Jadarian Price and Jabron Payne will do that. But no, I mean, point taken. I know where he's coming from. But Price or Payne, I mean, I think they're both capable of catching the ball out of the backfield. I'm not sure those are the slot options. I think Chris Tyree is.
Yeah, those wouldn't be my first pick, but I think Payne in particular is a good mention. Probably more so than Price to me.
Yes, I agree with that.
So that's another what Charlie Weiss used to always talk about, creating depth from within. And I'm like, well, that means you just have one fewer guy at the other position.
Right.
That's what they got to do. That's the reality they're living in right now.
It is. And you do have a little bit of leeway at running back. You know, I mean, you've got some that you have to play young. You have to play you definitely have to play a young guy like Price, but I think that's their intention anyway. So it's not an ideal situation. And look, I don't want to excuse anything here, but I think sometimes there's a perception that if there's a gap and this was created again by poor recruiting, but there are a million moving parts with a football team. You're going to have shortcomings at times. This is a little bit extreme. I get that. But sometimes the perception every time a leak springs that you should be able to plug it without any repercussions. That's not realistic. I realize this is definitely an extreme situation that was caused by not doing a good job in recruiting. Question from Irish. I was tailgating. How do you assess Harry Hiestand's 2023 offensive line class so far? Does it need another elite prospect or two so we can stop comparing Jeff Quinn to Harry Hiestand?
I'm very good. And I think if they end with Jagusa, it will be great. You know, that would be a great haul. And it sort of gets back to something we said in the first segment, or I mentioned, like, they love Elijah Page. Love him. So that, you know, Joe Otting from Kansas, it's like, I really see he's a three-star prospect, but he is a three-sport athlete, and Iowa thought he was good enough to play offensive line there. Like, if Harry Hiestand's vote of approval wasn't enough, Kurt Ferentz should, like, make it pretty obvious. So with Jagusa, I think it would be a great recruiting class. Jeff Quinn did a really nice job in recruiting too. Harry Hiestand did a nice job in recruiting before that. Ed Warner did a nice job in recruiting before that. What's the thing that never changed throughout that? The school they were recruiting to.
Yeah.
So that's important.
I guess I would hesitate to use the word great because, you know, I we're not sure exactly how high the ceiling is for Pendleton. I like Auding a lot. But I think that's going to take time. He needs to add considerable size.
Yes.
I like Jagusa a lot. I love Freeling. I think Freeling would be the crown jewel on that group. I think Page long-term has a chance to be really good, but isn't on that level with Jagusa and Freeling at this point. So, since Marcus Freeman was hired as head coach, like, our message board is, you know, most people are optimistic and everything's great. And this is going. So at a certain point you have to start bitching and moaning about somebody and something. And those
Hiestand recruit, like, offensive line recruiting is like 27th on my list of concerns.
Yeah. But there was a smaller faction that did not want Harry Hiestand to come back to Notre Dame among fans. And so when there appears to be a little bit of a bobble in recruiting, you know, that some are going to go back to that, but there are gaps. There are gaps on every roster, including Alabama from a couple years ago when they gave up 45 points in Mississippi in September. I mean, Alabama fans were hugely concerned about their defensive coordinator, and then they beat Notre Dame You know, Notre Dame hung in there score wise, but they end up beating Notre Dame pretty badly. So anyway, I understand the question. And I would stop short of saying that is great. Would be a great haul. Question from Port Andy. Is the Notre Dame men's basketball roster set for 2022-23? I'm not sure how much you followed that, Pete.
I have not. I mean, just on a very surface level with Goodwin and Rzewski and Cormac Ryan, you know, I realize that they're does Notre Dame basketball need a big man transfer more than Notre Dame football needs a wide receiver transfer?
That's the question.
Yeah.
P Sampson 2022 yes. asks, you know, I mean, when I inquired about Pete Nance as a possible transfer, the response was, how many guys do you think you are that are going to play that I got from Notre Dame? So I think it very well could be it. And they've got a very veteran basketball team that I think is going to be very, very good. I mean, they're going to make the NCAA tournament again. They need to get to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament for it to be considered any kind of success. And the other certainty is they're going to struggle rebounding because that's what Notre Dame does. They're 4-1, and they're generally lacking in size in lieu of adding more scorers and shooters. Fortunately, the shooting aspect, which was assumed in the beginning when they gathered those together and then struggled, really started to come together down the stretch of last season and should be a part of the regular shooting routine for Notre Dame moving forward. But I think there's a very good chance that the roster is set where it is. Question from Play Like a Champ 7. Do you think NBC is missing the boat by not trying to get Mike Golic Sr., Mike Golic Jr., or Brady Quinn in the booth calling games?
Somewhat. I think Quinn is excellent at what he does. I like Mike Golic Jr.'s sort of like vibe and persona. I realize it's probably not for everybody, but I think when Notre Dame's new or NBC's new booth comes out for Notre Dame this fall, I am highly, highly certain Jack Collinsworth will be doing play-by-play and Jason Garrett will be the analyst. And that's a big change from Mike Tirico and Drew Brees. So, or Tony Dungy the year before. So I don't really know, because it's like one of the things with NBC is like they want you to be sort of all in with NBC. It's like at Fox, Brady Quinn is able to do, I think, CBS radio and Fox TV. NBC, they would like you to sort of be all in house. So it's not as easy as just being like, well, can't you come in and just do these six games? But I think Brady Quinn in particular would be excellent if they can figure out a way to make that work.
But I mean, I think Brady Quinn would be excellent. I think, with all due respect, I think Mike Golic Sr., I think that time has passed. Mike Golic Jr. is kind of a lightning rod, I think, as you alluded to there a little bit, Pete. I don't think that would, despite the fact being a former Notre Dame player, I don't think that would float well. And I don't know. Does Brady Quinn want to do games? I think he's more of a pregame show kind of guy. I mean, it's a different lifestyle. I can understand the girl dad that he is, that he would want, you know, more of a in studio role as opposed to, you know, flying from here to there.
Well, I mean, he lives in Fort Lauderdale, but has to fly to LA for the studio show. So
okay. Well,
that's every week. Whereas Notre Dame, it's only home games. So
okay. Well,
that may be something to be said there.
That's a point, but he works for another company. He works for another broadcast company.
Also a point. That is significant.
Right. So, I mean, unless we know the contractual obligations and the specifics of Brady Quinn's contract, we're kind of guessing. Collinsworth is getting his feet wet with the USFL this spring. Huh? No,
he is. That's true. Yes, that's happening.
Yeah,
I just think I think Notre Dame people, there's a section of Notre Dame people have been like, why can't a Notre Dame person be in the booth? Why can't a Notre Dame person be in the booth? No, why can't a Notre Dame person be in the booth? Well, Jack Collinsworth, a Notre Dame graduate, replacing Mike Tirico, is basically impossible.
Oh my God.
So it's a, it is a tough first assignment, with a lot of people watching.
It's like, that's Bob Davey replacing Lou Holtz.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
Question from Irish from A2. The Notre Dame football coaching staff is having a lot of success recruiting. Do you think they would be having even more success if it were not for the era of NIL, as I alluded to in segment one?
Yeah, I do. I don't think that they would have, I don't think they'd be in a position to basically sign Texas A&M's class from a year ago, though. You know, maybe Dante Moore would be committed, which is not insignificant, but there were recruiting inducements going on long before NIL came to play that Notre Dame ran into on the trail, and those would still be happening. So yeah, I think they would be having more success, but I don't necessarily think they would suddenly have 6 5 stars committed.
You know, I basically agree with what you're saying there, and you can't change reality, and NIL is reality, and you've got Marcus Freeman. I mean, you've got the best imaginable young recruiter going for you. And that is definite, that you have that, you're going to have that for a while. You can't do anything about NIL, but you have a tremendous recruiter in Marcus Freeman. So when you weigh the scale, having Marcus Freeman is more important than any obstacles that you face with NIL. Excuse me. Question from Jay Marasco. These are directed a little bit more towards me because of Notre Dame baseball. The podcast after the Notre Dame baseball team was ranked number one, you said this was not a World Series team. What did you miss? Also, better odds, Notre Dame winning the College World Series or Link Jarrett staying at Notre Dame and not going to Florida State. What I missed is, I mean, I wouldn't say that I missed per se. It's just that you look at, like, you first of all, like, they were down 3-1 and 9 outs away from me being correct. But
yes,
and they took over the end of the game on Sunday, much to my delight. But I mean, you just look at them and they only have one pitcher that goes as a starter that goes deeper than 5 innings, and that's John Michael Bertrand, and he doesn't break 90 miles an hour, or rarely does. Secondly, I mean, look at who they matched up against in the Super Regional. On paper, they shouldn't win that, but that is, you know, it's not that I missed that I missed on the magic of Link Jarrett. I've been saying it and writing it for 3 years. I was saying it when he was 11-2 in 2022. He's just that good and has brought out the best in this group. And I don't want to take anything away from the players because they have to go out and do it no matter what kind of leader Link Jarrett is. But, you know, man for man, pure talent wise, they don't match up to Tennessee. But as a group, the whole is greater than the individual, and that's why we're all going to Omaha this week. And then
why couldn't you predict back-to-back home runs in the seventh, Tim? Like, what's the matter with you?
Right. When LaMonta came up, I thought, yeah, he's going to hit his second home run of the season.
I mean,
on that's the right field line where the wall is cut out and dips down right where he drove the ball.
That's what's the shocking part. Like, the fact that they beat Tennessee is surprising. The fact that they did it with power, like, they haven't done that all year.
There have been occasions. And I mean, and they did it with power in the regional at home last year, but Nico Cavadas had 5 of those.
That's different.
15 homers. But they do it in a multitude of ways. And that's why the handling of the pitching staff is just absurdly good. I saw Chuck Rustano when the team returned yesterday, and I've known the pitching coach, who I've known since he was with Mick Aoki, and I'm like, dude, how in the world? You guys are going to the College World Series and you don't have a starter and get beyond 5 innings.
Yeah.
And it's just because they do such a great job of I mean, it's both him and Jarrett, of course, Jarrett first, that just the feel for when you need to make a change. And now Tennessee fans were complaining about, or will be complaining about, Tony Vitello sticking too long with his pitchers on Sunday, whereas Jarrett had he always has a quick hook, but it was quicker than normal because it was what had to be done. So his feel for the game is just off the chart. And then the second part was, what's Notre Dame winning the better odds? Notre Dame winning College World Series or Link Jarrett staying in Notre Dame? I would say Notre Dame winning the College World Series. Because if you can beat, well, first of all, the odds are bad about Jarrett staying. And if you can beat Tennessee 2 out of 3 at Tennessee, you can beat any one of the obviously you can beat any one of the teams that you're going to play this weekend. Another question from Irish Boy One: if Link Jarrett leaves, what's next for Notre Dame baseball? Can they find a top-notch coach? I mentioned it earlier. How in the world are you going to replace Pat Murphy? Well, you found Paul Maneri, who took it up a notch. And I realized they swung and missed a couple times before they found Jarrett, but they found Jarrett. Much to the credit of Jack Swarbrick and Jody Sadler, who made the call on Link Jarrett. Swarbrick talks about when Jody Sadler, you know, he kept saying, well, should we? And Jody Sadler said, Jack, you're outthinking this. That's the guy. And he obviously was the guy. Well, Pete, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, it's worth remembering Paul Maneri was not Paul Maneri when he came to Notre Dame.
It's exactly true. He came from Air Force.
Link Jarrett was not, I mean, he was good, but he came from UNC Greensboro. I think Notre Dame baseball, that where they are in the hierarchy of college baseball, you're always going to be looking for that next up and coming coach. And if you can keep him for a few years, great. Because if you did, you got only had him for a few years, it probably you won a regional. You went to the College World Series, maybe you won a national championship. Like, enjoy that ride. That's the most important thing to me.
Right. And now, because of what he's done, you are going to attract a greater pool of quality coaches wanting to come to Notre Dame. So I have a hard time picturing the kind of guy that is a better strategist and handler of a team than what I've seen Link Jarrett do for 85 wins and 30 losses, I believe it is. I'm not creative enough to imagine somebody that's better than him, but there are good coaches out there that will want to come to Notre Dame now more so because of Link Jarrett. We'll wrap it up with a question from T. Branson. Since it is almost that time of year, who on the Notre Dame team, you'll understand what that means. Since it's almost that time of year, who on the Notre Dame team would win a hot dog eating contest? It was you three and the Irish coaching staff. T. Branson was anticipating O'Malley being with us. Who would win? I don't. Who would win? Okay, amongst us three and the coaching staff.
It's a shame that Kurt Heinrich is no longer on the roster for this question. I feel like I would immediately have gone to him. You know, it's got to be an offensive lineman. I think that a sneaky pick, this is probably overthinking of this question, but a sneaky pick would be Zeke Correll, because he basically has to like force himself to keep on weight. So he's trained. Call. In the art of forcing food into your body that you don't necessarily want to put in the first place. Zeke Correll is my guy.
That is a awesome choice. Awesome choice. I just by nature, but it's got, we're thinking offensive line, defensive line, right?
Yes. Yes.
Joey Chestnut being the exception to the rule, but Blake Fisher, I think the biggest dude out there, would be one of my first choices. And I look on the defensive line and he looks like he doesn't have any bad weight. So his diet is probably really good. But also when I look at Riley Mills, I think that Riley Mills could do some damage in the hot dog eating contest area. After that, I'm not really sure. I'm sure some of our listeners will have a couple suggestions. Tosh Baker's a big dude too, but he's pretty lean as well, all things considered. So, no correct answer, but I gotta tell you, I love the Zeke Correll answer because of the circumstances around him having difficulty gaining weight. We are wrapping up today's Irish Illustrated Insider. Gonna have to let you know about next week again, because there's a chance that I could still be in Omaha or traveling back from Omaha on Monday. So we will let everybody know one way or another whether we're going to do our next Iris Illustrated Insider on Monday and Tuesday of next week. Thanks for joining us. This has been Iris Illustrated Insider.